Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Sacramento Kings.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And happy Friday. Welcome in to another episode of the Locked On Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. This is your hub for the Sacramento Kings offseason here in 2018. Every day goes by, we get one step closer to the start of the 2018-19 season, a season I am very excited about, and you should be too. My name is Matt George. I'm from Sports 1140 KHDK, an on-air reporter and a multimedia journalist for the website. I have the privilege of being your host here for this podcast. What are we talking about today? Well, Kevin Durant and CJ McCollum had some great things to say about Willie Cauley-Stein. Colton Molesky from Minnesota is going to be joining us, telling us everything we need to know and why we should be excited about new Kings signing Nemanja Bjelica. And Bleacher Report released their power rankings for the ranking out of 30 NBA front offices. I don't think you'll be too surprised based off of the national media perspective where the Sacramento Kings end up, but we will touch on that for sure towards the end of the podcast. I'm really excited to get your feedback and have you hear what Colton has to say. We had a phenomenal conversation. We recorded it a couple days ago about Bjelica, so there might be some content in there that may be a little bit outdated, but only by a couple of days. I can promise you, though, you're going to really be interested and what he has to say about Bjelica, the good and the bad. Let's be honest, Nemanja Bjelica is not the sexiest of signings, just like Yogi Ferrell isn't the sexiest of signings, but there's still enough there to be excited about, and I think you'll be very interested to hear what Colton has to say specifically about Bielitsa's ability to play the three, if that was just hyped up, or if that's a position he can actually thrive in, if that's where the Sacramento Kings predominantly want to play him. So that's going to be coming up here in just a little bit. Also, I mentioned that power rankings thing. We're going to touch on that at the end of the show, so prepare to be maybe a little bit offended or frustrated by what you have to hear for that. But before we get to any of that, I wanted to share this with you. Willie Cauley-Stein is a very athletic, exciting center to watch when he is in the right system. And Sacramento Kings fans have seen how good he can be running in the open floor, and that has started to veer off a little bit, or certainly has taken a back seat as Coach Dave Yeager has taken control and played a more veteran-dominant half-court offense-type system. Willie Cauley-Stein has grown offensively in a lot of ways and has also struggled in a lot of ways. A lot of people would consider him to be an inconsistent player, which can lead to frustrations at times. However, we got a good reminder this week of really how talented Willie Cauley-Stein can be. And if you want good praise and admiration, and if you want a good recommendation, the best you can get is from your fellow players. Kevin Durant appeared on CJ McCollum's Pull Up podcast this week. And if you haven't gotten the opportunity to listen to CJ McCollum's podcast, he does a phenomenal job just having great roundtable conversation with NBA talent. And they always tell great stories, get good trash talking from time to time. But sometimes they'll drop little nuggets that you don't expect. And this nugget right here that I'm about to play for you was completely out of the blue brought up by Kevin Durant. They were talking about athletic centers and how centers have transcended the game. They were talking a little bit about Clint Capela. And then all of a sudden, Kevin Durant brought up Willie Cauley-Stein and what he can do. I want you to take a listen to what Kevin Durant had to say specifically about Willie Cauley-Stein.
You know who I like a lot is Willie Cauley-Stein. I feel like he's the next one of those guys.
Yeah, oh, he's springy, like crazy springs.
He's fast, too.
Right. Gets off the ground. Gets off the ground, like, as quick as anyone I've ever seen.
He gets them, like, once they get better at sack, they're going to see his athleticism is ridiculous.
So that is Kevin Durant and CJ McCollum sharing their praises for Willie Cauley-Stein. And I want you to pay attention to specifically what they said about running the open floor and his athleticism. When the Sacramento Kings first drafted Willie Cauley-Stein, remember, DeMarcus Cousins was on the team, and they were looking for a big man to pair alongside DeMarcus, an athletic rim protector type big man that could run in the open floor, that could run in transition, was athletic, could grab rebounds. And Willie Cauley-Stein is still more than capable of doing that. I've said it a million times that I think the DeMarcus Cousins trade was the biggest blessing and curse for Willie Cauley-Stein. It was a blessing in terms of it gave him opportunity to really step up in a big way, and I think he embraced that fully. It was also a curse because I think Willie felt the need, being the longest tenured king, to fill that scoring drought that DeMarcus was leaving, or leaving behind, I should say. Willie Cauley-Stein is not first and foremost a scorer, although he has approached his game over the past couple of years as if he is. And we've seen flashes of brilliance. We've seen every once in a while a handful of 20-plus point-per-game outings from him, but the inconsistency is what's so frustrating, especially on the defensive end of the floor. Where Willie Cauley-Stein is at his best and at his most effective, in my opinion, and I think the season that he had, his best season really, overall best season, maybe not numbers-wise, but overall his best season from beginning to end, in my opinion, was when he played under George Karl. Why? Because George Karl allowed a free-flowing offense that pushed the tempo, and Willie Cauley-Stein in the open floor is very versatile and very dangerous, as Kevin Durant and CJ McCollum themselves just said. So, why do I bring this up? Because as much as I love 20 points per game from Willie Cauley-Stein, and the Kings are certainly going to need that from time to time, I would much prefer 12 to 15 points per game Willie Cauley-Stein, who blocks shots, pulls down rebounds, and runs the floor. And I think he is capable of doing that if the offense and the system is right, which is why I want to emphasize, and I am a huge fan of Dave Yeager. I have always been a huge fan of Dave Yeager, one of my favorite guys to have a conversation with, a brilliant basketball mind. Nobody can say that Dave Yeager doesn't know how the game of basketball works, because that's just not true. He's also a brilliant developer of talent. However, he has been stubborn at times, molding a system to his players and not the other way around. We've seen him far too many times try and squeeze players into a system. That needs to change. There are too many pieces on this roster right now that are capable of running the floor, that are at their best, in my opinion, running the floor. You have one of the fastest point guards in the league. You have two very versatile outside shooters. You have a big man in Willie Cauley-Stein, also another two big men in Harry Giles and Marvin Bagley that can run the floor. You should be pushing the tempo. And if you're able to do that, that's where you're going to get the best out of Willie Cauley-Stein and Kevin Durant and CJ McCollum. Said it right there. I wanted to play that for you because I know a lot of fans recently are extremely turned off to Willie, and I can understand why. The inconsistency is frustrating, but he still has so much to offer, so much to give, and I can't say it too many times. Willie Cauley-Stein, there's no reason why he can't be DeAndre Jordan or Tyson Chandler in their prime. There's no reason he can't be that other than himself. Now, I've heard his excuses from time to time about he's afraid to block shots because he's hurt his hand or broken his finger on the rim. A lot of players or a lot of people question his basketball IQ. In my experiences talking with Willie, seeing Willie play and knowing what he can do in the right system, not saying you have to build an entire system around him, but at least build a system that complements him and the majority of the talent on your team. If the Kings can do that, I think you'll get a very effective Willie Cauley-Stein. I just wanted to touch on that really quickly because it was a great podcast. And again, I encourage you to check out all of CJ McCollum's pull-up podcasts. They're very, very good. There's also some fun little beef and trash talking between Katie and CJ McCollum that I'm sure you've seen if you follow national media, especially the national NBA media. We're going to get to Colton Molesky really quick here. He has some great things to say about Nemanja Bjelica. But before we do that, let me share my thoughts on the big man really quick. Looking at his numbers, they're not the most exciting thing. You're looking at a player that in his career has played 192 game, averages about 6 points per game, also a little less than 4 rebounds and an assist, about a 44% shooter from the field, 37% from three-point range. Now, that's for his career. Last season with Minnesota, though, he averaged 6.8 points per game in 67 games, spent half of his time, his play time, at the three spot when the lineup called for it. He shot 46% from the field, and what's most exciting, he shot 41% from three-point range. We're going to talk to Colton about his ability to play the stretch four, his shooting ability, and also how effective he can be fitting in the three spot. Enjoy this interview. Colton has a lot of great things to say. I promise you, when we come out back on the other side, you'll have a lot better understanding of Bjelica's game, and I think you'll start to be able to envision how effective he can be in this Kings system. I have the pleasure of being joined by another member of the Locked On Podcast Network family, the host of Locked On T-Wolves, also an SB Nation writer. You can follow him on Twitter, at C. Molesky, if you want. I highly encourage you to do so. Provides great content and coverage of the Minnesota Timberwolves. It is Colton Molesky. Colton, welcome into the Locked On Kings podcast. Excited to talk to you about what exactly those T-Wolves are doing there up north. And then the Sacramento Kings getting a signing or signing a player that spent some years there up north with the Minnesota Timberwolves, Bielitsa. I'm excited to talk with you about it. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited to talk basketball, as always, with anybody who is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and always excited to join a show that I haven't been on before. So I've been looking forward to this all day.
Well, good, man. It's a pleasure, and I appreciate you saying that. So let's just dive right into it. The Sacramento Kings signing Nemanja Bjelica, who agreed to a one-year deal with the Philadelphia 76ers, then decided that he wanted to go play back in Europe because I guess he felt slighted by the 76ers that they weren't willing to offer him more than a one-year deal. Sacramento Kings general manager Vlade Divac calls him up and says, look, you're better served to stay here in the NBA, and we will offer you a multi-term deal. The Kings end up agreeing to a three-year, around $20 million contract with the third year non-guaranteed. First and foremost, Colton, what are the Sacramento Kings getting in Bielitsa, and what is he going to be able to provide for this team right away?
Is it rude to tell somebody who covers the Kings that they're getting another guy who could be a high ceiling but low floor kind of guy? Because I feel like that's what we saw, at least when he was with the Timberwolves, somebody who could give you a really great 3-and-D presence, but also struggled with injuries, very real struggles trying to stay on the court. And when he's on the court, there's plenty of games. He started out last season very flat foot on defense, especially on the perimeter. But then you get those flashes late in the season when he had that 30-point game against the Celtics. That's what Timberwolves fans and people covering the sport like I am, people covering the team day in and day out, that's what we kind of have been hoping to see from him. And you get flashes of it, but now it's really being consistent both as kind of a gamer and just somebody who can be there every single game.
It seems to come and go with a lot of European players that they'll come over to the NBA and they'll show those flashes of what made them so successful overseas, but sometimes they struggle to develop that consistently. Ultimately, I think that's what cost Bielitsa not getting more money in free agency than what he ended up getting with the Sacramento Kings. But can we talk about his attitude and his personality a little bit? From your interactions with him, was his experience and how he handled the Philadelphia 76ers situation and ending up with the Sacramento Kings, was that a poor reflection on him as a player and as a personality, or more shame on the 76ers for trying to kind of underball him there?
I think that's a little bit on him, if I got to be honest. I think that when he's around the team, when he's on the roster, everybody really likes him. He's a really good locker room presence, a really positive guy around the Timberwolves. All the media guys really like Bielitsa. You're gonna be hard pressed to find a guy who doesn't enjoy hanging out with him. Whatever your issues with how he plays are, you're gonna be hard pressed to find guys both on the team and in the media covering this guy that really dislike him as a person. I think the problem was is I think that he really wanted to hang around the Timberwolves for an extended period, and so when they moved Cole and got the mid-level exception money freed up for, after they had him move on via waivers. I think that maybe Bielitsa thought this was kind of an opportunity for them to sign him to a little bit of a multi-year deal like he got with the Kings, get him around there for 2 or 3 years, and instead they move on from him and sign older guys like Derrick Rose and Anthony Tolliver to one-year deals on much cheaper deals. You're paying $2 million and $5 million for those guys, respectively. So I think that kind of hurt him that he wasn't being considered by the Timberwolves really at all. And then I think when he went to the 76ers, he was expecting a little bit more of a better treatment that he was anticipating from the Timberwolves, didn't get from the 76ers either. And so that's what caused friction between the Bielitsa and 76ers camp, is because Bielitsa, I think, really wanted a team that was willing to commit for a couple of years, and he got kind of passed over by the Wolves and then passed over by the 76ers, and it went the wrong way.
Colton, there seem to be two major ways to use Bielitsa. The second one I'm a little more interested in, but let's start with the first one. We know about his shooting ability, so he seems to fit well into that stretch four category. That seems to be so important in the NBA nowadays, guys that can space the floor and big men that can also provide you scoring inside and can rebound, but are just as good or just as useful on the perimeter, opening up space and hitting the outside jumper when they need to. How well does Bielitsa fit that role, and can you see him consistently being able to do that for this Kings team?
I think there is a way where you can really play him well alongside guys like Fox, Bagley, and if you have two guys and Josh Jackson and Bielitsa who are really committed to really stretching the floor for a guy like Bagley, I think that could be a really fun offense, and I think there's a lot of potential there, especially when you have a guard like Fox, who is going to be a defensive playmaker and a real distributing piece. Somebody like him, I think, is going to really be able to take advantage of a Bielitsa and Jackson who are just really feeling themselves on the outside. The problem is that Bielitsa needs to jump into a rhythm defensively right away, because that's really where he struggled early on with the Timberwolves, and that's what really hurt his minutes early on. And Bielitsa is a guy, I think, who needs a few more minutes. I'm not sure he's one of these guys who can consistently come in. Not saying he won't be able to do it ever, but I don't think he can consistently come in and only play 10 or 11 minutes and really feel a rhythm of a game. I think he's a guy who needs to be in there 18 to 20 minutes to really get the rhythm of the game and really feel out the pace of the game and find his shots against various teams on various nights. And so the way he gets those minutes is to really show up and show out on the defensive side and be the big kind of disruptor when guys are trying to look for passes and trying to find those cutters from the outside looking in. If he can disrupt some of that stuff on the perimeter and break up some plays right away on the perimeter, then that's how he gets minutes in games, and that's how he finds rhythm offensively. So I think for him, defensively is where it starts, and the project of that is him becoming really good on offense.
The Sacramento Kings have a gaping hole at the three spot, Colton, which I'm sure you are aware of, as is everybody in the league. And when the Kings signed Bielitsa, they talked about this idea or concept that Bielitsa could actually play consistent minutes at the three spot when needed. I know statistically he played around actually half his time in Minnesota. He played at that three spot. Is that an exaggeration of just what the lineups that Minnesota was putting out there? Or I know about the defensive concerns. Can you see Bielitsa being effective playing consistent minutes, maybe even starting for the Kings at the three spot?
Yeah, I can definitely see him finding a rhythm at that three spot. It really just does depend on what they're going to have him do. I can't see him really crashing a ton from that spot. I think that the best case scenario for him is if they really want him to mold into a 3-and-D guy in that small forward spot. I think that's the best position for him. So really, I think if you're looking at the Kings lineup, it really comes down to what you're expecting to see from that three spot on the court. And that's where you're going to see if Bielitsa is really going to give the Kings what they need to get into a starting role. Because if they expect him to play super outside of that position and be kind of a loose 3-4, then I don't know if he's going to be their guy. But if you're expecting somebody who's really going to stick more towards the perimeter in that three spot, I think Bielitsa could be pretty productive. Again, he just needs to find consistency, which has been a problem over his career. And so whatever they expect from him, he just needs to find a rhythm really fast.
One area of concern of mine last season that I'm really hoping the Kings address and emphasize this year is their transition offense. For a team as young as they are, with De'Aaron Fox running the point, they should be in the top 10 or top 5 even of the league in transition offense. I'm going to express a stereotype that I can certainly relate to. A tall, white, European-type player has a stereotype of being slow and someone that you mentioned how flat-footed he can be at times on the defensive end of the floor. Is there concerns of putting Bielitsa in a transition-based offense? Can he consistently be that guy that just jogs down and gets into the corner or gets on the wing and waits for the kick-out pass? Is that something you can see him excelling in?
Maybe. I don't know. It's not something that you saw him really excel in with the Timberwolves. And furthermore, you're always worried about depending on guys in transition when they've had problems with their lower body stuff. And he always seems to be one of those guys that is kind of banged up, has these nicks and knacks and problems around his knees and ankles. And it's just when you're expecting somebody to be running 100 miles an hour in transition, game in and game out, you really need him to stay healthy. And so that's one of those areas where it's hard for me to see him be consistent just because I haven't seen him consistently healthy yet, you know? And so if I can see him really play out a full season without any kind of hampering injuries, holding him back for a month, for any given month throughout the season, then we're in a field of possibilities for Bielitsa that we just haven't seen because he hasn't been that way. He hasn't been that version of himself yet. And so that's really where it's key, is him being healthy. And you can say that about any guy, but for a guy with his injury history, I think that's more pivotal than for most guys.
One of the things I love doing when talking to great basketball minds outside of Sacramento like yourself is getting your opinion, an outside opinion and perspective on what the Sacramento Kings are doing. I think Kings fans, listeners, people that surround themselves with Kings basketball can learn a whole heck of a lot from outside perspective. So based off of your knowledge of the Kings, I don't know how vast it is or not, of what the Kings are trying to do and what they have put together over the last couple seasons, what do you think about what Sacramento is building here and ultimately their long-term rebuild gold?
I like a lot of their young pieces. I like the length that they're trying to go for, especially the perimeter length that they're trying to build towards. I watched this team a lot in summer league when I was in Vegas, and my hot take right now actually on the Kings, and I said this on the Locked On Wolves show in Vegas at summer league, while I'm watching this team just on the court, right in court side, watching this team right there right now, and I'm not saying this can't change, but right now, Harry Giles is the best player on this Kings team. What do you think of that?
The main roster overall? Wow, that's quite a claim. I'm certainly hopeful that Kings fans can or Kings fans will see that, and he can be that. I think it's De'Aaron Fox's team as of right now to lose, but if I was to tell you the best or most consistent player on the team as of right now, it's Bogdan Bogdanovic. But if Harry Giles can live up to even half or a quarter of the hype that we've heard surrounding him, especially the last season, all we heard from players and staff about how good this kid is, if he can live up to even a portion of that, I think the Kings will have hit a massive home run getting him late in the first round.
I'm just saying, as somebody who went to summer league games when he wasn't covering the Timberwolves, as somebody who went to the Kings games to watch Bagley, I went for Bagley. I stayed because of Harry. He is a monster. He was ferocious around the boards. He was always, he was really efficient scoring, but if he wasn't able to get his hands on the basketball, he would be around blocking shots, getting steals, getting boards, super aggressive on the glass, and he just had a motor that I wasn't seeing from Bagley yet. And somebody who, if I'm looking at the Kings roster and just how they played last year, I think he could be such a pivotal piece for them coming in and being such a monster on the boards. If he can play like he played in summer league in the NBA, and I know that there's a step up, especially on the defensive side, from summer league to the NBA, obviously, but if he can find that same motor and find and excel in those spots where he's able to read what players are doing and block shots like that, he's going to be a monster.
You just made yourself a lot of fans here in Sacramento. A lot of Kings fans agreeing with you there, buying into the Harry Giles hype. We got to see him for a few games in the California Classic. And what I'm most excited about is that he's out there playing consistent minutes on a night-in, night-out basis, playing a lot of games in a short period of time for someone coming off of the injury history that he has had. That is certainly a welcome sight to see. Last thing for you, Colton, because I'm curious. I'm sure you get this a lot, or you hear these rumors and conversations a lot following the Minnesota Timberwolves. But Tom Thibodeau was under a lot of scrutiny last year, really about how much he played his starters and how much time that he spent just focusing on them, even when the games were really pretty much closed out, said and done. What do you think about his job security right now with Minnesota, and how are his players doing? Are they happy with him, unhappy with him, willing to play for him, or is that overblown?
I was talking to some guys at Summer League. In Summer League, that's, you go for the networking, right?
The gossip.
Yeah, exactly. You go for the gossip, the networking. You got so many people working for so many teams all in a very small area, watching only a few players. And so you do want to watch some of these rookies, but you also want to go and gossip and network a little bit. and talking to a lot of people, there's a toxic nature in the locker room of the Timberwolves that has reached out now to people who are anticipating getting drafted, to will be rookies, where when they go for workouts, they know that the Timberwolves are a toxic place to play.
Wow.
And that's not a good thing, especially now that I really truly believe the Timberwolves have at the very least a really solid 9 to 11 man rotation. I think they have some really solid pieces, and I think they're a really deep team with the draft picks they have now and some of the guys they picked up in free agency. I think that they're a very deep team, and if you see them running Towns and Butler and Wiggins and Taj Gibson out for maximum minutes, Taj Gibson is in the twilight of his career. He averaged 33.2 minutes per game last season. That's too many minutes, especially when you have young guys like Tyus Jones. You got Justin Patton coming this year, Josh Okogie, Keita Bates' job. All these guys should get minutes, especially in October, November, when you're kind of figuring out your roster and kind of figuring out all the different things you can do with all these guys. They have a lot of players. And so if by December we're still seeing them not try to use a bunch of this young talent that they have and not try to discover what they have in this young talent, I might just hop over to Sacramento and just talk about Harry Giles instead of pulling my hair out watching these Timberwolves, because it's ridiculous.
I'll welcome you over here with open arms anytime, buddy. I know I said that was the last thing, but Sacramento Kings will choke me out if I don't ask about Andrew Wiggins. We're hearing rumblings here in Sacramento, minute interest in the possibility of, we know the Kings have a lot of cap space or have had a lot of cap space to be able to take on bad contracts over time. Andrew Wiggins is one of those, I suppose, you could fit under the bad contract category. I'm higher on Wiggins than a lot of people are, because I think a lot of people judge him based off of the dollar sign next to his name and not necessarily the stats and the numbers that he's putting up. Is Wiggins someone that you feel the Minnesota Timberwolves are at all interested in potentially moving on from? And if so, in your mind, what would it take from the Sacramento Kings to get him out of Minnesota?
Well, I think that you'd need to offer up some picks for him. And I think maybe getting somebody off of the Kings roster who's going to help out the Timberwolves front court, especially that power forward spot. Keita Bates' job. The talk was that he might be able to play some of the four, but he is a rookie, and so to expect him to really change the spot and really help give a second rounder to really help add stability to their four spot is just unrealistic. So if you could get somebody who would help out the front court and some picks, I think the Timberwolves would be willing to deal him. We already heard him mention that he was not exactly thrilled with his spot as the third guy, the third option on this team. And with Josh Okogie, I'm going to be honest, if Josh Okogie plays defense like he did in Summer League, Andrew Wiggins is going to be the fourth guy on this roster, probably sooner rather than later. And Wiggins still, he was the third option, but he didn't really see too much of a change in his shot attempts and things like that. He still had a pretty big role in the offense, and it was a better spot for him defensively, guarding the second best guy while Jimmy Butler took on the best player on the court for when the Timberwolves were taking on opposing talent. And I don't know. The problem is I don't know how to get Wiggins to try for more than 21 to 25 games a year, and that's a real problem if you're paying him max money.
So let me just throw this out there, because I was worried you were going to say one of the two, either Bogdanovic or Buddy Hield, which are two names that I want the Kings to hang on to desperately, but they're probably, other than De'Aaron Fox, who's not going anywhere, the two most valuable pieces of trade bait that the Sacramento Kings have. Based off the information that you just gave me, let me throw this out there. The Kings have a massive amount of second round picks, so take your pick of one or two of those, along with a 2021 first rounder, Zach Randolph and his expiring contract, and Scal Labissiere, young power forward that can stretch the floor. Does that do it? Is that enough? Or does there need to be another high priority, high quality player in that package?
I think instead of that, I would go with the same players, but I would take the 21 pick and I would try and push, instead of two second round picks, I would try and push for a pick in 22, because now it sounds like instead of the 2021 draft being the draft to let high school players come out. Now, haven't you heard that I think it's that 2022 or 23 might be the draft that they do that. And so maybe trying to pick up a pick in 22 is the move for the Timberwolves when they're letting high school players back in. I don't know. Have you seen those reports as well where they're pushing back the high school draft?
I've heard rumors and change that Adam Silver is trying to implement, but I haven't seen any direct dates or anything like that, but it's certainly interesting and something to speculate on.
Really, any time that if you think that they're going to start letting high school players back in 21 or 22, if you can grab picks, if any team can grab more picks,
scoop them up
in one of those drafts and it works out for them that one of those gets to be where it's a double draft, I can't see why you wouldn't go for those picks, you know?
Colton, thank you so much for taking the time, man. It's fun to play Armchair GM with you. Thanks for all the great stuff that you had to say about Bielitsa. If you're ever in Sacramento, let me know. Say hi. I'll shake your hand, desperately root against the Minnesota Timberwolves while they're here. And if you do want to jump ship and come over to cover and watch Harry Giles, I have no problem sharing a seat with you up in the media section, buddy.
Thank you so much for having me on. Really appreciate it. Always willing to talk hoops with anybody who will listen.
That is Colton Molesky. You can follow him on Twitter at @CMolesky. You can also find him, the host of the Locked On T-Wolves podcast, which I encourage you to check out, and also check out his work with SB Nation as well. Colton, thank you so much. Have a good one, man. We'll do it again soon. Huge thank you to Colton for taking the time. We'll definitely have him back in the near future. An awesome interview, an awesome guy. We continued our conversation actually after we ended the podcast, just talking about a mixture of things, including if the Kings made the right draft pick, Marvin Bagley, how Bielitsa legitimately could fit and work with this team. And he still had a lot of great things to say. The defense is interesting. The flat-footedness is a concern. I like what he said about you have to work Bielitsa into a consistent system if you want him to be consistently good. You can't just expect to throw him out in one position one night and in another position another night, which sometimes Jaeger has a tendency to do. So that's something to definitely pay attention to. But if you want to check out Colton's work, I encourage you to listen to the Locked On Timberwolves podcast. Very interesting saga going on there. It's going to be very interesting to follow. And then, of course, I had to ask him that question at the end about Andrew Wiggins, because I know a lot of people here in Sacramento have been whispering his name if the Kings should be or would be interested in bringing him in to fill that three spot. I do not mind it if, like Colton said, the Kings could manage it and could get it for without trading a Bogdan Bogdanovic or Buddy Hield. But Colton obviously is not Tom Thibodeau and is not that front office there in Minnesota, so they might be asking for a little bit more than what Colton was willing to take on to separate from Wiggins. Clearly, Colton not too big of a fan of Andrew Wiggins. But my thanks again to him for joining the podcast. We'll definitely have him on again as we get closer to the season or in the midst of next season. I wanted to touch on this really quick, ending on a bit of a negative note. I understand, but I had to bring this up, and we're going to talk about this in more detail next week. The Bleacher Report, they always do fun little power ranking articles that don't really mean much, but they have good analytics to them. And they did recently, or today rather, they released their power rankings out of all 30 NBA front offices. And guess what? The Sacramento Kings are last. And I don't think that should surprise anybody. Out of the 30 NBA teams, the Kings are 30. And I'm going to read this passage to you in just a second. But before I do that, I want to say this. A lot of you are going to agree with what he had to say, and I strongly disagree with some of it. I also understand a lot of it, a lot of where they're coming from. It's by Grant Hughes, who wrote this article, and Grant has produced great content before, so I'm not necessarily going to question his IQ or his approach to it. But again, this is the national media perspective in a nutshell. So Sacramento Kings were ranked number 30. The team ranked number 29 was the Memphis Grizzlies, which is interesting based off of the fact that they got Jaren Jackson Jr. and just traded for Garrett Temple. So I wouldn't be as low on the Grizzlies as Grant is here in this article. But this is what he had to say about the Sacramento Kings. He said, "Improved organizational stability and a beefed up scouting department didn't prevent the Kings from bumbling through yet another curious offseason. The decision to select Marvin Bagley III at number 2 overall looked foolish from the outset." He doesn't go into detail why. And Bagley's 33.3% shooting in summer league before a pelvic bone bruise ended his participation didn't do much to dispel the idea that the Kings reached for the wrong guy. So here is my question about that first paragraph. Everybody is telling me, and a lot of people are saying, that Luka Doncic was the clear-cut number two. And just because we saw a lot of mock drafts that suggested that Luka was the clear-cut number two, that's what so many are saying. Yet, essentially, Luka went three, ended up with the team that picked fifth, although he would not have fell to five. Just he wouldn't have. I don't think there's any chance he was going to get past the Memphis Grizzlies at four, who ended up with seemingly a good pick in Jaren Jackson Jr., like I said. But the idea that the Kings have reached for the wrong guy, it's way, 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 way too early to even consider making a statement like that. Now, I understand that he says perceived idea that the Kings reached for the wrong guy. But again, he mentions the 33.3% shooting in summer league. Summer league guys is important and not important. And it's important for these guys to get their run. And of course, we're going to overhype when players like Jaren Jackson Jr. or Harry Giles have a good summer league game. We're going to overhype it and make it look like they're the next greatest thing on the planet. And if they struggle, everybody's always going to bring up the bust conversation. I promise you that's overhype and unnecessary. Bagley shot 33% from summer league. Yes, there were a lot of areas that were concerning, especially on the offensive end of the floor, his ability to really back down opponents and his consistency to go to one hand and not go to another. Those are concerns. Those are issues that we saw immediately. But here's the good news. Marvin Bagley has months to work on that before the NBA season even starts. Training camp is still a month away. So I guarantee you Marvin Bagley, with the reputation that he is a gym rat, is already working on all this stuff with the Kings coaching staff, the Kings training staff, his own personal staff, and his teammates. So I'm confident that Marvin Bagley's issues that we saw in summer league, which are already glaring in there, are going to be addressed, and we're going to already see not monumental improvement, but we're going to see improvement by the time the regular season starts. Luka Doncic, I understand, was the sexy ideal name for so many at the number two spot, but you have to pay attention to the fact that Luka, after the Kings spent multiple trips overseas to Spain to scout him, had dinner with the young man, they still did not take him. Now, you can question Sacramento and the Kings front office's decision-making there, or you can question what they saw in Luka and what they liked and didn't like. And we don't know yet what it is that they saw that they could be right or wrong about. If Luka comes out and tears it up, Marvin Bagley is so-so, but Luka tears it up in Dallas, then we will know that obviously the Kings made a mistake. But when I read articles like this, and I understand the approach and I understand the speculation by any writer, local or national, but when you read articles like this, you have to understand that they're writing these from the perspective of they are understanding that it's way too early, but they're trying to garner a reaction. They're trying to get a response. And the Sacramento Kings are an easy pick for 30. As soon as I heard this article was even written, I knew the Sacramento Kings are 30. I want to continue reading this passage here. Luka Doncic was right there waiting for them, and even if he wasn't their preferred target, the Kings could have telegraphed an intent to pick him that would have netted them a sweet trade offer. Again, he is going off of the idea that the Kings didn't get a deal done because they didn't try to get one. We have no idea how the Kings were involved in trades and if other teams were trying to ask for too much or Vlade couldn't get an ideal return. Ultimately, Vlade and the Kings seemingly got the guy that they wanted in Marvin Bagley. And if he truly was the guy you wanted, there's nothing wrong with taking him at number two. You can read the rest of this passage, because it talks about the Kings signing Yogi Ferrell and Nemanja Bjelica and offering Zach LaVine the big contract and all that. Most of it's negative, I understand. You can read that and take it how you want, but I encourage you, read this, recognize it as a legitimate approach and a common opinion that we've heard time and time and time again this offseason, and understand that none of the claims that he's making are anything but speculation until we get into next season and well into next season. So don't get too fired up or too worried about what Grant and what Bleacher Report and what the national media thinks about how the Sacramento Kings are being run. We know their history. We know their struggles. And we know that they are seemingly working their way out of it and excited to put together this young core. And they felt Marvin Bagley fit that system better than Luka Doncic would. So I just want to put that out there. It's a bit of negativity. You'll survive it. You'll get through it. It's all good. We went long today. I apologize for that, and I understand that, but it is a Friday, so we have to get all that good stuff in there. Next week, Yogi Ferrell spent a couple minutes on Cage Decay with Grant Napier and Doug Christie. I want to play a little bit of that for you. We can also talk more about this article next week if you have any questions, responses to that. If you do want to reach out to me, please do, at MattGeorgeKHDK. On Twitter is a great way to reach me. You can send me any questions that you have, respond to this article, respond to the interview, all of that. I love to hear that. Also, if you have an email address or you want to email me instead, mgeorge@saclocalmedia.com. If you have a second, go onto iTunes or go onto Stitcher, leave a quick review, tell us what you like and don't like, give a rating out of 5 stars. We read that, we soak that all up, and it helps us improve this podcast, so please do that if you do have a second. And we will talk to you next week as another week of the offseason is in the books. Thank you to Colton. Thank you to everybody who joined us this week. It's been a fun week of podcasts, and I will see you for another fun week starting on Monday. Until then, my name is Matt George. Have a wonderful weekend. Be safe. Stay cool. It is hot out there. And you have been listening to the Locked On Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.